listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Wednesday, June 10th. It is a scorcher here in Salt Lake City. It is your boy, Marsh. It is the home of your 2020 hopeful ACC Coastal Division champion Miami Hurricanes. As always, I am joined by my co-producer or co-host and wonderful producer, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, got a lot of good things going. What's going on? Talk to me.
Dude, it is. I mean, the coronavirus stuff is cooling down. Miami football, I mean, we're back in hype season again. You know what I mean? We're landing some big recruits. We're hopeful on some other big recruits. You know, we're gearing up for football season. I'm just happy that it's going to happen.
Absolutely. Football will happen. Whether or not there will be a full stadium on September 5th, that's another question. But there will be football, the Hurricanes. And on Sunday, it was announced, we'll get into this a little bit later, but Jared Williams,
yes,
he's a Hurricane, baby.
Dude, we desperately needed that. And yeah. I love that we were able to get Isaiah Walker and Jared Williams. Just cannot speak to how huge that is for our program and our team this season.
Yeah. I mean, just to have like an experienced offensive lineman who's also been with De'Aaron King. So, but anyway, we have a big show for you guys today. We have two of our favorite reoccurring guests coming on. We got John Michaels first, and then we got Mike McCoy a little bit later. So let's dial up our good friend, John Michaels.
Okay. Well, real quick, I want to give a shout out to our boy Brad Tejeda.
Yes.
Who we have on the pod all the time. He announced that he got a radio show over at what is it? It's Sirius XM Slam Radio. Is that correct?
Yep.
And so we're gonna have him on here in the next week or so that he can tell you guys more about that. And we're super happy for him. He's a great guy. He's been invaluable to what we do here. He's helped us out probably way more than any of you guys could possibly know, you know, behind the scenes and stuff. So yeah, so awesome, Brad. Congrats and good luck, bro.
Absolutely. Yeah, Brad has been so huge for us, and so we can't, we'll get him on the show soon. And so things, good times with Canes fans. So
yeah, man, it's exciting times again. Like I love, dude, there's nothing better about being a Miami Hurricanes fan than the off season, like the hype season. Yeah. Off season championships.
Yeah, I mean, Sunday night, once Jared announced that he was coming, I was driving, and I was in the middle of nowhere, and I like lost my mind, right? And once, because I was late, I was about like 10 minutes late because I couldn't get service, and I was refreshing because I knew it was going to happen that weekend. I actually predicted that he was going to announce on Saturday, but yeah. I'm just happy that it's over. We got him, and I mean, just the presence of that kind of guy, I might even change my prediction to 10-2 now.
Yeah, join the dark side.
Hey, I am the dark side.
Yeah, all right, I'm gonna dial up John right now.
Hello,
John Michaels, what is going on, man?
What's up, guys? How you?
Pretty good. I know you're in New Orleans right now. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, no problem at all, man. You know, anytime we want to talk Miami, I'm down.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also got to give a special shout out to John. He sent me a lovely care package in the mail the other day with a Braxton Berrios autograph and also a Ja'Cory Harris beautiful, beautiful jersey. So, yeah, John, man, I just want to thank you again, brother.
Nah, anytime. Now, you're the only one that would appreciate that jersey. And it's funny, the last time, I'll be honest, I forgot I had the jersey. I've got, you know, down in my basement, I've got stuff that I haven't worn in forever. You know, the bigger jerseys aren't really in style anymore. So I haven't put on any of the jerseys. And I happen to be down there and I open up my closet. And I go, oh, crap, I've got this Ja'Cory Harris jersey. And I know Marsh loves Ja'Cory Harris. So I said, let me throw this in the care package and send it to him. And it's funny, the last time that jersey was worn, let's tell you how long ago it's been since, and I didn't even wear it. I had a bet with my old producer at an old radio station back. I guess it had to be 2013 when we played Florida down in Miami when Al Golden, you know, somehow coaxed Jeff Driscoll to throw like 9 interceptions that game and Miami won. Our bet was the loser had to go clean shaven and take a picture in the other team's jersey. Well, Bo is like 5'8 and about 160 pounds. So that's an XL. That's a big ass jersey. So him there with clean shaven is one of the funniest pictures I've ever been able to take. Yeah. Thank God I didn't have to wear like a medium Florida jersey and be clean shaven because that would have been hell of embarrassing.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, I'm excited to wear that just around town and also to a game. But let's get into the Canes. On Sunday, it was announced that Jared Williams, the best offensive lineman in the transfer portal, would be coming to Miami. How are you feeling about that, John? It's a huge pickup for the Canes.
I love it. And I'm actually, you know, if you guys read the stuff at stateoftheu.com, I'm doing a 10-part series basically just breaking down every position group and asking the question, does Miami have enough to contend for the college football playoffs? So I was on Hockman and Crowder yesterday, and of course Crowder's laughing. Playoffs, you guys, you lost to FIU. And I said, I get that, but the goal for Miami every year is to win a national championship. It's to play in the college football playoffs. So I haven't got to offensive line yet. Thank God I hadn't, because I would have been a lot more scathing with my breakdown of that team and that position group if Jared Williams isn't there. Here's the best thing about him. He walks in immediately and is your best tackle today. Now, does that mean Jalen Rivers or Isaiah Walker somewhere down the road won't be better tackles? No. It just means right now on June the 8th, 2020, that Jared Williams is he might be the best offensive lineman you have right now. So all of a sudden you plug him in at either left or right tackle, and I would plug him in at left tackle. You allow the ability for Zion Nelson to take the red shirt that he needed last year anyway. You probably allow one of the two in Rivers or Walker to take a red shirt. And I saw where Walker's coach even said he'd probably be best suited, you know, to have a year to reshape his body, to get into college shape, this, that, and the other. You can still play him in 4 games against the Wagners and the UABs of the world, but you let those guys sit. Now you could potentially move DJ Scaife down inside where he's better, put him at guard. Maybe Devon Donaldson's back healthy. If not, you've got Ja'Kai Clark. Corey Gaynor's sitting there at center, and he played pretty well a year ago. And John Campbell, if you believe everything that you had, you know, for the 4 spring practices, looks like he's finally taken it serious. And maybe that guy's your right tackle. Suddenly your own line doesn't suck the way that it did a year ago just by adding one grad transfer.
Yeah. And to piggyback on your point, the fact that we're going to be able to slide Scaife inside, that actually means that our interior line is actually really good for the starting lineup. I mean, Gaynor is solid, Scaife and Clark, and then Donaldson. Like, that is – we went from having a bad line to at least – our interior is pretty rock solid going into next season, at least for the starters.
It should be. And, you know, Donaldson's the big wild card. We don't know. I mean, they haven't said 2 words about his knee. We have no earthly idea. Was it minor enough to where he'll be ready for fall camp? Was it major enough where maybe he has to sit out a year and take a red shirt? You know, does he take it serious enough to lose weight? Because I think if Navon Donaldson could get in the 330 range, instead of playing at 350 or 360 or 380, however big he had ended up getting.
Yeah,
he's Navon Donaldson, you know, we saw him as a true freshman. He was an all-conference type player. All of a sudden, the last 2 years, he can't move his feet. So I like that idea. Clark, you know, again, if Donaldson's healthy, Clark can sit back and learn his natural position of center, and maybe you allow him to take a red shirt. And guys, you know, I always think about building on the offensive line. Unless you're getting the elite of the elite, and I'm talking like Alex Leatherwood a couple of years ago, or some of the players that, you know, that Georgia or Alabama have plugged in as 5-star elite offensive linemen. You get a 4-star, those kids need to come into school and typically take a year to get their body right. And Miami hasn't had that ability or enough depth on the roster to do so. Hopefully now, with Jared Williams taking one spot and being able to move some other pieces around, you may end up having that happen.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a really good point. That red shirt is so crucial. And I think it really hurt Zion Nelson last year. Obviously, he improved throughout the season, but I mean, you just look at what he had to do in order to get ready for to be that starting left tackle. I mean, he had to put on like 60 pounds. And when you throw out, I say this all the time, when you throw out an 18-year-old week one against a defensive line like the Gators had, you know, his confidence just is going to go down. And so a lot of people are expecting Jalen Rivers or Isaiah Walker to maybe play this year. But kind of like what you said, like if there's some – if we're blowing out Wagner or UAB – put them in there, but other than that, like let's develop these players like we should. Like we don't need to rush into it as when they're true freshmen.
Yeah. It's the best thing that could ever happen to the program is getting back to, you know, kids shouldn't be starting really until they're sophomores or redshirt sophomores. Again, if you get the elite of the elite, Chantrell Henderson years ago was the best offensive lineman we had the day he walked on campus. Okay, he starts at offensive line. Eric Flowers, you know, was the best offensive lineman we had. He walks in and starts. Big Vaughn, you know, Devon was actually the best O-lineman we had as a freshman or pretty damn close to it, and he was able to start. But those guys should be few and far between. You know, we basically took, you know, Zion Nelson to me is this year's Chris Washington. Chris Washington probably shouldn't play at Miami till he's a redshirt junior at best. He's a kid that's going to take a couple of years of work, a couple of years of technique, strength, conditioning, everything else. And I think you just nailed it when you said 18, the difference of being 18 and potentially going against a senior who's 22. Think about where, you know, all of us collectively, where our bodies were at 18 as opposed to where we were as 22. You know, those 4 years in college where you're eating a little bit better, you're in the gym, and, you know, I wasn't on a Division I scholarship by any means, but I gained muscle. I gained some strength. I gained, you know, appetite and everything else, stuff that I didn't have in high school. The O-line, it's different. You can throw a freshman wide receiver out there that runs a 4-3. You run a 4-3 at 18, you can run a 4-3 at 22 and still go make catches. You're a 300-pounder going against other grown-ass men who are 300 pounds and have had 4 years of nutrition and can get after. It's the same thing on the D-line. That's where Miami has failed so badly. And it really goes back to think about, was it Brandon Washington leaving a year early and some of the other guys that have left, and you go, why aren't you still in this program? Venzel Bulware leaving to do what? You know, like stay one more year and play college football. I just don't get it.
No, and I can I couldn't agree with you more. And so the next thing we want to talk about is the wide receiver room, and I know you're working on a piece for State of the U right now. I know that for this piece you've probably, you know, studied a little bit about the Canes receivers. A lot of people are kind of skeptical about this room. I used to be a really nervous about this wide receiver room, especially, you know, we lost Jeff Thomas, lost KJ Osborne. We have a lot of potential there right now, but not a lot of production. How do you feel about the Hurricanes wide receivers going into 2020?
Not to give away everything, I'm actually going to post the article today. I was going to do it tomorrow, but I got it done while I'm waiting for a high school graduation to get over. I said, let me get this out here tonight and then do the tight ends before I leave to go to Florida for the weekend. So what do I think of them? Potential's there. The actual production is not there. And when I went back and started dissecting stats and gameplay, D. Wiggins is arguably our number one receiver, right? I think we could all agree that he's the number one coming into 2020. He had 20 catches, or he had 20 catches a year ago, and 13 of them or somewhere along those lines. I'm sorry, he had 20 catches a year ago. Seven of them were against Florida State and Louisville. Over half of his yards were against Florida State and Louisville. I can't have a receiver that for 10 games gives me 13 catches. I can't have a receiver in 10 games give me 130 yards. And I get it. He wasn't the number one a year ago. It was obviously Thomas and Osborne, as you just mentioned. But even as the number three, Thomas was non-existent last year. There's no reason Wiggins couldn't have had bigger games. Then you go down. Mike Harley has lived up to kind of what he was. He was one of the last recruits to get in. You know, he wasn't the biggest, wasn't the fastest. I think his ceiling could be what Braxton Berrios did in 2017, especially in this offense. Mm-hmm. Mark Pope's been a disappointment, whether it's been Mark Richt, whether it's been Dan Enos, or the rumors, and I use very loosely the rumors that Mark Pope couldn't learn the playbook, whatever it is, this is the most decorated wide receiver we have on the roster, and he's done nothing at Miami. Then you throw in Jeremiah Payton, and these are those are the only four guys that are coming back to school that have played college football. Payton had one catch a year ago, and one of the big mysteries to me last year is How do you have a guy with the physical tools of Jeremiah Payton not getting any burn? Why are you not playing him at the end of the year when the season is over with? Let that kid have an opportunity to play. Now, am I excited of the potential? Do I think Pope will be better? Hell yeah. Do I think Payton's going to have a nice year? Yes. Do I like the four freshmen they brought in? Sure. And do I really like them all in Rhett Lashley's offense? Even better. Because if you go look, James Prochet was his leading receiver a year ago. Prochet had, I think, 111 catches last year. Yeah. 111. The year previous, he had 93. James Prochet had offers from places like Arkansas State, Colorado State, you know, some of the other nondescript schools, and ends up going to SMU and gets drafted. What do you think Mark Pope or Mike Harley, guys that were four-star recruits that everybody in the country wanted to go play to them, what do you think they look at? I am skeptical about the group. I'll be honest. I put point blank, this is not a playoff contending group, period. Yeah. They have to prove it to me on the field before I'll buy into all the hype.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you, John. I've been very vocal about my distrust of the wide receiver unit for pretty much every reason that you just you laid it out perfectly. So and with you, I'm on the D. Wiggins train as our number one receiver. You know, the optimist inside of me, the yearly Canes hype man inside of me, thinks that he could seriously pop this year. I think if anyone goes over 100 catches, I think it'll probably be him, or gets near that number. And honestly, I think he has the kind of physical tools that he could like really bust onto the like the mock draft scene with a good year under Rhett Lashley. So I'm cautiously like optimistic, I guess, right now. But that's mostly schematic more so than roster based.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The scheme has proven itself over and over again. Now, they didn't have quite the passing numbers when he was at Auburn. But remember, Gus Malzahn wants to run power spread, not as much, you know, not as much passing spread. The Dykstra, Sonny and Spike Dykes, they want to throw it around. Gus wants to get up and manipulate you with formations and quick snaps. But at the base of what he wants to do, he wants to run the football. Auburn, when, you know, with Gus calling the plays, was always at their best when they had a really good quarterback who could run. Obviously, yeah. Cam Newton, when he was an offensive coordinator, and even Nick Marshall, they were on the, you know, on the edge of winning a national title there. I think now with Rhett kind of getting a little bit of both of those trees, I don't know that we'll see a Miami guy go for 100 catches, but I think you could see four or five guys go over 60 catches, which is something that, you know, Miami hadn't done in a long time. Like, you really look at it, we haven't – I know Braxton had a really good 2017, but I think he only had about 45 catches. It's just every one of them seemed like it was the catch to win a game. You know, Langham had like 20 catches, and 10 of them were for first downs or backbreaking plays against Florida State. It'll be nice to see us have three or four or five guys. You know, and I'll get the tight ends, too, when we – you know, when I do the article with them. But, I mean, this could be Brevin having 55, 60 catches. Will Mallory having another 30? Like, we're actually going to have the ball being spread around for the first time really in about 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, and people don't realize, I mean, how difficult it is for a Division I wide receiver to have over 100 catches in a season. I mean, that's very rare. I want to ask you about Mark Pope, because I've been very vocal about him on this podcast and also stated to you. I'm very – I just don't know about him. Not negative, but everyone has been hyping him up so much since he came in from high school, and rightfully so. I mean, his high school tape was incredible. Do you see him breaking out in 2020 or what? What do you think of Mark Pope?
He better, and I know with all the workout videos that he's been posting, I'll give him that. It seems like if nothing else, he's taking it serious. And I think there, you know, for kids, there's a lot of time a light switch will click somewhere. You know, and it's typically when you start getting towards that junior year and you go, oh, crap, I won't sniff the NFL if I don't get something right now. Like, Mark Pope's a smaller dude anyway. He's going to have to be electric to have somebody in the NFL take a chance on him. Jeff Thomas has had more production, and he was an undrafted kid. Pope, I think the light finally clicked. Part of it, and I'm with you, I don't always buy the bullshit rumors that we get from everybody where it goes, oh, this guy couldn't learn the playbook. You know what that is? that's lazy ass reporting a lot of the time, or it's you may have heard somebody say something and you go along with it. And that's why my article, I literally put, I stress these were only rumors, but something obviously wasn't right where he couldn't get on the field with Mark Richt's offense. He couldn't get on the field last year, outside of a handful of plays. But I do think he has potential to be this year 45, 50 catches, because you see how quick he is in and out of breaks. You see that the potential of running jet sweeps and other ways to get the ball in his hands, it's all there. It's just a matter of him being given that opportunity and somebody like De'Aaron King having the confidence to throw him the football. I think, Pope's the type guy. We play Temple. If he goes four catches for like 105 yards and a touchdown, all of a sudden that confidence goes back to where he was in high school. And all of a sudden you see the kid that everybody saw on tape. I'm waiting to see it. I hope I see it. He's one of the guys that could absolutely pop, especially playing in the slot. I think him and Mike Harley could have huge mismatches with linebackers and safeties and make a lot of plays in this offense.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. And so here's a question about the offense I have for you. So last year, I pulled up SMU stats. They had their top three rushers. They combined for just over 2,000 yards of rushing. So between Jalen Knighton and Cameron Harris and De'Aaron King, do you think that they can combine for at least 2,000 yards, if not 2,200?
That's a big number, but yes, I think they can, because again, if you not just at SMU, but go back and look at what they would do at Auburn. I don't know that Harris will get 1,300 yards, although the ability is absolutely there to do so. I think they're going to move pieces in and out, but think about it. You're going to get 500 or 600 yards out of De'Aaron King, something that Miami has never had. Like literally they've never had a quarterback with that ability. So let's say you get 500 or 600 out of King, you get 900 out of Harris, which might be a low estimation. You're already at 1,400. And then you throw in Cheney and Knighton, Burns getting a couple of carries as well, some sweeps. They're absolutely going to be close to 2,000 yards. And once they do that, and again, this kind of goes back to the original question about the offensive line. If Scaife can go inside, we're better run blocking. If Donaldson can go and he's healthy, we're better run blocking. Mm-hmm. Think about the lanes that are going to be there. DJ Dallas averaged 6 yards a carry with basically the three of us out there blocking last year. What do you think is going to happen now when you have real O-linemen and a scheme that's going to make the defense less compacted? Dan Enos had 11 guys within, 7 steps of the football. Rhett Lashley's going to go sideline to sideline and make you defend everything. And we have a quarterback that you have to account. How many times we run that stupid fucking read option and you knew Jaron Williams wasn't going to keep it. You knew Nikosi Perry wasn't going to keep it. Like, why the hell did we keep running that dumb shit?
Yep. RPO with the slant. That was our pivot last
year. I mean, you've kind of convinced me right there. It was something that I've been chewing on mentally, for the last few weeks thinking about. But you might have just sold me on it that I think the player that has, like, the most upside to make a statement season is Cameron Harris, just for all the reasons that you said. I mean, he's certainly, you said DJ was able to get 6 yards a carry with just a horrible situation last year. I think Harris is similarly talented to Dallas. Maybe not as good, but I'm a big fan of Harris's game.
I love Cam Harris. And in this offense, he's a one cut downhill runner. Find a hole, I'm going to run through it, and I'm just going to keep running. You're going to have an offense where if he can make a linebacker miss, it might be that linebacker in 50 yards of grass.
Yeah.
Think about that with Cam Harris now, how exciting that could be with 220 pounds of bowling ball running into a secondary where guys aren't going to want to tackle him.
Yeah, man. There's potential for him to really, really make a statement this season. I think it's all set up perfectly for him. He just has to do it. I think the infrastructure is there.
I want to know who the general manager is for the University of Houston that would trade De'Aaron King and Jared Williams for Bubba Baxa. Is Bill O'Brien's dumbass pulling the trigger for the University of Houston too? That's the dumbest damn trade I've ever seen. For the Nuke Hopkins trade was ridiculous, but we gave up Bubba Baxa. I can make more kicks than Bubba Baxa at 45 with two bad Achilles. Like, I can make those extra points that he – and I'm dead serious. I can make – now, I'm not going to make anything past about 35 yards. I can make those damn extra points that he kept missing a year ago.
Poor Bubba. Okay, so last question for John. I know you haven't dove into the tight ends too much yet, but what are your thoughts on not just Brevin Jordan, but Will Mallory as well? Because I think I mean, obviously everyone knows I'm a huge Brevin Jordan fan. I'm also a really big fan of Will Mallory, and I think he's gonna have be one of the breakout players for the Canes offense this season. What are your thoughts on both of those guys?
I thought the best thing that happened to Mallory last year, and you hate to see Brevin Jordan be hurt, obviously, was Mallory get a chance to be the guy. And he showed, because remember early in the year, he had two bad drops against Florida. He had a bad drop against North Carolina. Two of those drops could have cost us the game. Although in retrospect, that might have kept Dan Enos around another year. So it's almost better that he dropped the passes and got that candy ass off my campus. But I like Mallory. And again, it goes back to mismatches and matchups. I never thought Enos took advantage of what we did. You know, early on in the first game of the year against Florida, I think it was the second play of the season, we run a quick out to Brevin Jordan with receivers downfield blocking, and Jordan breaks a tackle and goes like 30 yards. We never saw enough of that with the tight end group. Think about it now. Again, sideline to sideline. You go put three of those receivers out there and one or two of the tight ends and get those tight ends matched up, A, against a smaller safety, or B, against a linebacker that can't run with them. Marsh, yeah. You may have just tweeted like a little while ago, or maybe somebody else did, the throw from Nkosi to Brevin Jordan against Florida State to give us the lead 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's what you should do with Brevin Jordan. You had him matched up on, I believe, their safety who couldn't run with him. And Jordan runs by him. Well, Mallory can do that same thing. And now that he's got confidence that he can catch the football, because I thought early in the year he was beating the football up instead of just using the natural talent that he has, you let that happen, I think both of those guys can have monster years. The good thing is Mallory won't leave early. The bad thing is Brevin Jordan, this is the last 13, 14, hopefully 15 games, we'll see a Brevin Jordan in a Miami uniform.
Yeah. And who can blame him? I mean, he'll most likely be a first-round pick. But, man, I'm just salivating at the thought of, like you said, I think we all watched that opening drive of Florida and just could not have been happier with Dan Enos, but it just evaporated as soon as it came. And, you know, I cannot wait to see Will Mallory, you know, being matched up against like a tiny safety and just go hog wild on him. I'm so excited for it.
The thing that makes me so excited, here we are, 87 days away from Miami's first game against Temple. And it looks like, well, there's not even a look. We know the game's going to be played. And it's pointing more and more like fans are going to be there. I don't know that it'll be full stadiums. Insert the joke you want. We really won't have to worry about that for a while anyway. Yeah. But the thought of 20 or 30,000 fans there, Miami can get really loud with 20,000 fans when they need to. And that's the best thing. We look like we've kind of got through the rest of the bullshit with the coronavirus, or at least I hope that way. And we're finally going to have some football being played really, really soon.
Absolutely. Okay, so John, thank you so much for coming on, brother. It's we love having you on. You're one of our favorite guests, and go have a hurricane for me at Pat O'Brien's.
I don't know that Bourbon Street is open yet. I say unfortunately, but I got a high school graduation. Our niece graduates high school today. I got lucky. I got to stay home and watch the boys because it's one of these stupid drive-through graduations, and you can only bring two cars. Well, her family, my wife's family, is gigantic. There's like 20 of them. And I'm like, I don't have to go. I'll stay here and write. You know, I'll do some of my writing for the week. So I'm good with that, but I will have some Tito's and Red Bull on your behalf.
Good deal, man. Good deal, man. We'll have you on in a few more weeks. How's that sound?
Anytime, guys. You got my number.
All right. Thanks, John.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate you. All right. Wonderful.
One of my favorite guests, man. He kills it every single time.
Dude, he is a talented man. Love having him on. He's so incredibly gifted when it comes to radio and podcasting, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, even though he's been a sports talk host, like in Atlanta for a few years and like a big national media guy, he still makes times for the he still makes time for the Canes. Like, he knows he knows this team, and
Totally.
I just he's one of my favorite guests. I remember what I was telling my dad the other day, because he listened to the episode last time that John was on, and I was like, yeah, I only met John once, and it was in Orlando the night before the Gator game, and he came like out of nowhere and said, "Yo, are you Marsh?" And I'm like, yeah, yes, sir. I was, he was so intense. I was like, and I loved it, man. He is awesome. And I love when he posts pics of the Canes tattoos he gets. Yeah, it's pretty BA. And then we got Mike McCoy. He is, I think he's ready for us.
Yeah, he is. I'll patch him in right now.
Gentlemen.
Mike McCoy, what's going on, brother?
How you been, man? What's up, Jordan? How you doing, man?
How you doing? It's good to hear from you, bro. Welcome back.
Absolutely. Same, man. Same. I appreciate it. How you guys been? You guys good?
Yeah, all good here, man.
I've been good. I mean, I had the privilege of talking to you this past weekend when we did you know, the Canes fans Zoom, but Jordan wasn't there, man.
You missed out.
Yeah, I don't know. I just so that day that it happened, I was kind of taking a little bit of a break from Twitter, and I guess I just missed out on all the fun. So
it was a good time, man. I mean, 2.5 hours just like flew by.
Yeah, I'll have to catch it next time.
You want to know what we all missed out on too yesterday? Everybody on the Zoom call, I had no idea that yesterday was National Sex Day. That's horrible.
I saw that on Twitter like at like 2 o'clock in the morning last night. I'm like, oh dang it, I missed it.
But yeah, congratulations to everyone who was able to observe.
It was awesome though, because I'm sure you saw it, Jordan, but I was on the Zoom, and both of my parents came on to say hi to Mike, and my dad gave a little speech to the Canes fans on the call. It hyped me up.
Cool. I love it, man. Yeah, I'm 100% in for the next Zoom call. So I heard rumblings maybe Friday, so I'm gonna try to be there.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, like so yeah, let's get into it, Mike. First things first, Jared Williams is a Miami Hurricane. What are your thoughts?
Automatic starter, right? I mean, it makes perfect sense. Automatic starter at a position of need, because I remember for a while everybody was saying, man, there's a bunch of guards on the roster. Where are the tackles at? So position of need, it'll I don't care what side he's on, but I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of position switches, so why not leave him on the right side? Either way, experience with the quarterback. He's used to playing 80 snaps a game, so this is not going to be any different. He's going to be conditioned, so I think it's a great, great, great addition.
Absolutely. Do you see him as a – because, I mean, it's been – I've been talking about it with Canes fans since he announced on Sunday. Do you see him as our left tackle or our right tackle?
Like I said, I hate position switches. I mean, from right to left, it's – I've never been an offensive tackle in my life, but I would imagine there's a significant difference, even though it's still the tackle position. You know, you're flipping everything from one side to the other. So me, I hope he stays on the right side, and just because he's familiar at it. Now, can he play the left side? I'm sure he can. I don't know how much he did it at Houston. I haven't really done my homework in terms of that, but I hope he stays on the left side the right side, just because it's more familiar for him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And Jordan and I, we gave our starting five offensive linemen last week, but I did want to ask your opinion. Who do you think which five linemen do you roll out on September 5th?
I like Clark a lot at center, but I love Corey Gaynor. I've loved Corey Gaynor since the moment he signed. Yeah, man, I like Corey Gaynor a lot. He's a mauler. He's mean. He's nasty. He has a mean streak. I would like to see him take that spot at center. Guards, we got Navon Donaldson. Oh, I got Navon, and the other guard, to me, it's a toss up between Clark and who else am I thinking? What's the other?
Scaife.
Yes. So Clark and Scaife battling out for the other guard. And the tackles, I got Campbell at the left, and we already talked about Jared on the right side.
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of people have over the past few days – sorry to cut you off, Jordan. But over the past few days, there's been a lot of talk on if Donaldson is going to be ready for the season. And I don't know, man, because we haven't heard that much, and that worries me a little bit. And also, I mean, if you look at just body size, could Jachai Clark be even a better fit for this offense?
Well, we know that this offense, you're going to have to be athletic. You're going to have to be nimble enough. And I'm talking strictly offensive line. So we all know that these guys are going to be having to move and be conditioned pretty much. And that's kind of, I don't want to say the knock on Vaughn, but he could stand to lose a few pounds. So if that's what the talk has been on Twitter in terms of him not being ready because of conditioning, I'm sorry, but I happen to think that the strength and conditioning department and coaches will have that down to where it needs to be. Clark, if you look at body size and, you know, in terms of conditioning, yeah, because he's, you know, not 360 or 50, however much he weighs pounds. But we'll see, man. I think that, you know, the more the merrier, everybody's going to want to play in this offense. So with that being said, you know, you're going to want it to be in the field. You're going to have to do what it takes to keep your ass on the field. So do it.
Yeah, well, so I was curious, what's your take on Zion? I notice he's not a lot of people are throwing him into the mix to start at tackle again. I thought he improved quite a bit towards the end of the year. And, you know, I think he was inherently disadvantaged in the fact that he got to campus and was he an early enrollee last year? Was he January or was he May?
I think he got there in January.
Okay,
him and Jeremiah Payton were the only two early enrollees, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So he, the guy only has 8.5 months to put on, exactly. What did he put on, like 60 or 80 pounds or something like that, and then start against one of the best defensive lines in the country. So he was at an inherent disadvantage. I don't know if you guys have ever gained even close to that much weight within a year's time. I gained like 30 pounds in like a 9 month span. It wasn't good weight. But let me tell you that it takes a toll on your body. You know, it makes your knees and your ankles hurt and it's just weird. You know what I mean? So I don't want to count out Zion just yet. I think he was just so disadvantaged last season. I really would not be surprised to see him. You know, I don't think we've heard everything from him yet. I really could see him end up having a good career here at Miami.
And if I may, I also think that I think Jared Williams coming, we just had John Michaels on the show, and he kind of touched on this, but one of the best things about Jared Williams coming to Miami is that Zion, I think, is going to have that redshirt season that he should have had last year. Obviously he improved a lot last year. A lot of people just want to base his performance for the entirety of the season just on the Florida game.
Right. But I mean,
you look at especially like post Virginia Tech. I mean, Zion Nelson was improved a lot, and I really really like Jachai Clark, and it's just interesting how those two are going to be. I think Jachai Clark, not next year but the year after, is our starting center. Instead of Gaynor, but it's going to be interesting with this offensive line moving forward, especially with with McLaughlin and Seymour and Ryan Rodriguez and Isaiah Walker. So it's not a bad problem to have.
Three things. I totally agree with what Jordan said. I almost called you Nelson. Sorry. Jordan said. But yeah, man, he gets a lot of heat, and it's really not. It's kindergarten and elementary as it sounds. It wasn't fair. He wasn't put in a fair position because you think about this. He was going to Appalachian State. You're not going up against Zuniga at Appalachian State day one after weighing 240 pounds and you're up to two. It wasn't fair. He was put in a pretty precarious position and he had to learn on the fly. It sucked. The thing is, with this offense, we're going to be running however many plays a game, right? He's probably the most athletic lineman. He's suited for this. Suited for it. And plus, we all know the ball is going to come out of the hands quickly in this offense I was going to say whoever's playing quarterback, but that was stupid. Of Derek King's hands. So the ball's going to be coming out quick. They're not going to have to block for long. Get down the field, do it all over again. He's not being mentioned. I don't know why. But I mean, I hope he gets some run. The other thing you said about him maybe getting redshirted, Marsh, I heard maybe people, I heard the idea of Von Donaldson getting rich. I don't know how realistic that is since being
his senior. Yeah, I've heard that a lot too. I mean, and that just goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Because I haven't heard anything about how he's doing with his injury and everything. And you don't want, especially if he's trying to improve his draft stock and everything. And especially if he's trying to like lose all this weight, you don't. It's kind of like that Zion Nelson situation. You don't want to rush that process, especially when it's his pro career, like his potential pro career, and he's trying to get ready for that. And so, I wouldn't be surprised if he does redshirt and we don't see him until week one against Bama in 2021. And if Jakai Clark is my starting guard on September 5th, I'm totally fine with that.
I'm totally fine with that, too. And remember, we're talking about a guy that was freshman All-American as a true freshman at right guard. And then I don't understand what the thinking was when they tried him out at tackle. That was just kind of weird, but he could play.
Definitely. And I think a lot of people are not giving enough credit to Gaynor and also Scaife. I think Scaife is a very, very solid offensive lineman, and he's been thrown like in every single position.
Is he a tackle or a guard?
He's best, in my opinion, he's best when he's at right guard. But last year, I want to say he was the right tackle.
He was.
He was. So, I mean, and when you do that to an offensive lineman, it's like that's just screwing up their, you know, their development. And so that you have to take that into consideration with the poor offensive line play over the past few years. I mean, you got Gaynor, who also has played guard and center. You have Donaldson, who played guard and tackle. You got, and I think Donaldson was our center like during spring ball last year.
That's crazy, man.
So,
so a guy that we're kind of forgetting, and Marsh, I know me and you were talking about him back when we were still asking everyone about spring ball for the first 5 weeks of quarantine. But Osman Traore, or I don't know if that's how you say his name. He started the season on the first team offensive line for spring practices. So he's a guy that could, you know, slip into that guard spot if we're having issues with Donaldson's health. Or we decide that Clark needs to take a red shirt or something like that. We do have more options. There's just some guys that are kind of being left out of the conversation right now.
Cleveland Reed is another guy that nobody's talking about. And if I'm not mistaken, it was a big time fight between the Gators and the Canes for his services. We obviously knew who won out, but that was a 4-star kid coming out. He's another name that needs to be thrown around. So, I mean, options. There's options there.
Was it between Miami and Florida for him coming out of high school or him for which school he would go to after he hit the portal?
No. I believe coming out of high school, it was a Florida-Miami battle.
Well, and I think a lot of people forget that Cleveland Reed is back on the roster. And you and I, we talked about this on the Zoom call the other night. Right. That's an interesting situation because – we're trying to fix this culture and should we bring this guy back? I mean, we already did. So you have to think if he came back, but Brian Hightower did not, you have to think, Cleveland Reed leaving in the first place, there had to be some legitimacy to it.
Somebody said it. I think it was Brad maybe on the Zoom call that yes, every situation is different. It's just, this is where it's tough as a coach because you bend a little, you can't break the rules, but where do you draw the line? And that's hard. Hard to do because how do you determine what's fair and what's not?
Honestly, I think it'd be harder from a PR standpoint for the fans. Because, you got to remember, like, these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. Mm-hmm. And Manny has, I would assume, in a lot of cases, he has an inside scoop on their personal life. Right. A lot of people we're just throwing shade at Tate Martell and I don't know Tate and I can't speak to his personal situation, but I think at some point you just have to trust the coach that they probably sat down and Manny asked Tate what was going on and he was satisfied with Tate's answer, because at the end of the day, Tate is 20 years old. So,
That's a very, very good point, Jordan.
Yeah, think about how hard life is as a 20-year-old. I mean, you know, it's even if it's smaller things, you know, dealing with family and with the pressures of school and living on your own for the first time, like, it's not a very emotionally stable time in most people's life, I feel like.
No, I get it, man. And I don't know. One thing I like about UM is that when they really want to keep something hush, they do. It doesn't hit front page headlines. And so I still don't know. I don't care to know what the situation was with Tate. It was something personal. It was taken care of. But you're right, man, because going from Vegas, then to Ohio State, then to Miami, then you have this model as a girlfriend and all these expectations. You were a five-star guy. I mean, not everybody has to deal with that.
He was on a TV show as a 17-year-old.
There you go. I didn't even know that.
He had like 30,000 something followers as a high school kid. It's crazy.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was in QB1. And so the next thing we wanted to I want to talk about is the wide receiver group. And you were on the show right before spring practice, and we previewed the defense. So I wanted to get your views on some of the offensive positions. When you ask, you know, Hurricanes fans, if you were to ask 100 Hurricanes fans how they feel about the wide receivers right now, 50 would say, you know, I'm confident, I think they're going to break out, and 50 would say, I'm very skeptical. Where do you land on the wide receivers?
I'm all in. I've drunk all the Kool-Aid that there is to drink, every flavor, every color. And the reason is because I know that they are athletes, and that's what you want at the receiver position. You know, just that combined with the fact that they're going to be in a system that's going to allow them to succeed. Okay. The spread should have been in Miami since the football program's inception. And unfortunately it just got here in 2020, but these guys are going to be having fun. Okay. And I'm all in. I think that the other half of fans that you've talked to and say, ugh, I don't know, it's only because we haven't seen it. These guys are football players. This is what they do. They've been doing this since they were 6, 7, 8 years old. This is not foreign to them, okay? So all they need is an opportunity. And I go back to, you know that I defend Mark Richt with everything. But one thing that I didn't appreciate was how much of an experienced guy he is. And what I mean by that is all the guys that got run in year one of Manny should have seen run in year three of Richt, but they didn't because they weren't the experienced guys, but they were the more talented guys. So a lot of the mistakes that we saw last year was because of the fact that these guys were getting snaps, heavy snaps, for the very first time. That's out of the way now, okay? That's out of the way now. They're going to be in a different system, but they're going to be in a much more It's less complex from everything I understand. Eno's system was like chemistry on the field. And I'm not worried at all. I'm not worried at all, man. I really am not. And I don't think I'm being a homer when I say that either.
No, and I think that that's a completely fair answer. I mean, the people who are skeptical about the receivers, I get it. Just because, I mean, last year I remember like the day before spring ball started last year, I was on your show, you had Mark Pope breaking out, and you weren't the only one. Last season, it was definitely a disappointing one when it comes to wide receivers, but you can't just blame them. The scheme just did not work, and people forget. I mean, some Hurricanes fans, the more negative ones, are going into the season thinking that they're going to see the same offense.
Yeah. That's
And I don't get it. Like, I mean, SMU last year, I think they had three receivers over 60 catches. One of them had over 100, and then three more, I believe, had over 30 or above. And so those are numbers that we have not seen at Miami, maybe ever. This system is wide receiver friendly. I mean, you don't have that thick-ass playbook that Dan Enos brought to the table. And so it's a system that it's based on, you know, these short routes and just getting the playmakers balls in their hands at when, you know, once they reach that top speed. And so a lot of people need to go back and actually study this offense that we're going to be running, because the wide receivers should thrive in it.
Yeah. I do think you guys are being a little generous to how our receiver room played last year, though, because it was KJ Osborne plus a turd sandwich. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was really bad. And I mean, I don't know. I'm less optimistic than you guys are. I do believe in D. Wiggins. It really helps that we have two great tight ends, And then we're also going to have Jalen Knighton, who I'm expecting to be a legitimate pass-catching threat. But, you know, I think between Harley and Pope and you know, there's a lot of buzz about Jeremiah Payton. If we can just get one of those guys to be solid, if we have, you know, Wiggins, one of the group that I just named, and then our two tight ends, and you get, you know, solid pass-catching production from Jalen Knighton, we should be completely fine, really.
My thing is this. Like, okay, I'm looking at SMU stats right now. I pulled them up. I'm going to read to you their receiving yards last year. You go from the top of the list, 1225, James Proche or Proche, whatever. Reggie Roberson, 803. Kylan Granson, 721. Rashee Rice, 403. I mean, those are receiving yards. So you have three guys that went over 700 yards. Two of them went over 800 yards. One of them went over 1,000 yards. Their running back, their leading running back, had 20. No, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Rushing. Yeah. Their leading running back had 20 catches out of the backfield. Mind you, he only had 90 yards, but it's still 20 receptions. And he ran over 1,200 yards. I mean, how bad do you have to be to not be successful in this offense? Miami has guys that were recruited by the LSUs, the Georgias, the Bamas. You know, yeah. Everybody wanted these guys. They're from Miami. They're receivers. They don't suck. That's my thing. Like I said, I think that the people that are kind of iffy on it's because they haven't seen it yet, and they got to see it to believe it. And I get it. But for me, I don't need that much. I don't need that much convincing. I can see if we had guys that were recruited by FAU, FIU, Sisters of a Poor University, but that's not the case.
Yeah, definitely. And I think once we start seeing what this offense is going to look like and how it's going to benefit the receivers, I think it's just going to make people realize even more how much the John Rick system, how much the Dan Enos system really screwed our you know, players at those positions.
Really did.
As sad as that sounds.
It really did.
I mean, the fact that Jeff Thomas, as talented as he is, the fact that he was basically non-existent last year is unexcusable. And I feel so bad for him because I think there was really only one game where he broke out, and that was the Virginia Tech game. And look at what he did when he got the ball in his hands. I mean, you and I were at that game, and then the rest of the season, he doesn't get touches.
Look, the thing with the offense is last year, I mean, everybody has their own opinion, but it seemed like they were playing in a phone booth. And what the hell are you doing with all that speed and talent, bottling it up on one side of the field? That's easy to cover. That's easy to cover for a defense, man. And I mean, that's my non-X's and O's perspective of it. But I don't know, man. A spread is a spread. And I think we're actually going to see guys spread across the field, hard to cover. And that's going to make it easier for the run game, too.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, playing NCAA 14, I rack up all the receiving yards with the four verts play, man. I just run it over and over again, and I do fine. So I'm not. So I'm not taking any excuses about the Mark Rick system. No, I'm just kidding.
It really was like so bad, especially like in 2018. It's like it's pathetic how bad our offense was that year, and I don't mean to sidetrack because I just do this when I'm talking to either of you guys with the Canes. We had the number two defense in the country that season, and we were 7-6 because we couldn't score anything. It was that bad.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's inexcusable, dude. I mean, I hate to relive the past, but you wasted a championship caliber defense.
Yeah.
That's inexcusable.
Absolutely. And I was going through the game by game stats last year. I mean, we even held LSU to only like 250 yards of total offense that game. I think there were four games where we allowed there were six games where we allowed like under 20 points or below, and we lost like three or four of them.
God damn it, man. That sucks. Well, last year up until Duke and then the bowl game, we lost every game by one score. Every game by one score, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown, one score. Up until Duke, which was double digits, and then obviously the bowl game. So that should tell you something right there.
Yeah, and it tells me like, that maybe we need to give Enos another year. No, I'm just kidding.
If he steps foot in South Florida again, I will deny him entrance. Like,
that guy is a running backs coach.
I just can't believe this. Like, we were so blinded last offseason. Yeah. I am the most guilty one of this of all, because I think I wrote an article a week in last offseason how this offense is going to be one of the greatest in Miami history because we have Dan Enos. We all thought that he was bringing that Alabama spread system to Miami, and little did we know he was bringing his Central Michigan system to Miami. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you could only go by what you're told, and he I don't know what the hell happened in the locker room or in meetings or whatever he saw, but that was not a spread. If we had the play calling from that very first drive of the season against the Gators for the whole year, Miami would probably won 9-10 games.
Yeah, man. Manny just straight up lied, and I like Manny. I'm not out on him. But he took a page out of his politician dad's playbook, and that, you know, he's like, I'm going for something up-tempo, fast, modern, ferocious. And then he hires Dan Enos, and if you rewatch the interview, you can see him, like, walking back some of those terms a little bit. You know what I mean? He's like, it's very modern. It's, you know, it's multiple, you know,
motion.
Yeah. He's like, it's going to be a spread coast, you know. It's like, whatever, man. You just straight up lied to us. You told us you were going to go get something modern, and you just went and got a guy who's running. Oh my gosh. He's running the freaking 1987 San Francisco 49ers playbook.
Well, and if you think about it, like, that Enos hire kind of came out of the blue, because I don't know about you guys, but I thought we were going to get either Fedora or Applewhite. Yeah. Like, those were my two picks. And then when I heard that we were getting Dan Enos, I'm like, who the hell is that?
Yeah. Like, but then when you find out, oh, wait a minute, he's a Bama guy, it starts to,
Yeah, Jaren Williams is about to become Tua.
Exactly. That was the plan.
Gosh, like, ridiculous. But going back to the offense, I think one of the most we always talk about on this show, we talk a lot about how excited we are for Jalen Knighton, especially because we think he's going to be the number two running back. I don't think people are giving Cam Harris enough credit as our starting running back. What are your thoughts on him, Mike?
That guy is the starter, man. I mean, look. I think that's another thing we were talking about in the Zoom call. Yes, all these running backs that Miami's had over the years from everywhere else except the 305 area code, great, I'll take them. They're good. What's his name that just transferred to UF included? Forget his name. It's incredible. I forgot his name already.
Oh, we're running out. I don't know his name.
That guy.
Yeah.
I'll take him. Cool. But there's literally something in the water down here about – and I'm talking about running backs in specific. I'm not talking about high school football players, not receivers, not DBs, not DNs. Running backs from Miami are literally a different breed. And you think about it. You've got Davenport, McGahee, Gore, Walton was awesome. Yearby even went over 1,000 yards. And Cam Harris is no scrub, man. That dude, I think it was the Gator game. He did it multiple times throughout the year where he ran over guys. Like, he's not just fast, he's physical, he's an in-between. He has the whole package. I think he's strong, and I think what I like the most about him is that he's strong in his faith. So he's not going to be easily wavered. That guy's focused, and he respects everybody else on the roster, but I think he's entrenched. I think it's a no-brainer there for him to be a starter. Yeah, there will be competition between Knighton, Chaney, great, okay. But at the end of the day, it's going to be Harris getting the bulk of the snaps.
Yeah, and I think he displayed a lot of locker room leadership this offseason as well. Yeah.
Yes, good point.
And he's not what I love about Cam Harris is that, he's posted a few things on Twitter, but he's not that guy. He's not the social media look at me guy. And, we have a few of our players, and I'm not a fan of posting your workouts or anything, even though I post pictures of me in cutoffs all the time on Twitter. But that's one of the things I love about Cam Harris. He's not a loud guy. He's just that quiet leader, and he leads by example. And for – I mean, if you were to have anyone replace DJ Dallas, not just as a talent but as a, as that guy, I don't think there's anyone better than Cam Harris.
No, I agree, man. Look, you know what they say, gangsters lead in gangsters move in silence. So he's not a man of many words, which is awesome. We don't know what he's like away from – because I don't know them. I don't know the guy. So maybe he's different in the locker room. I don't know. All I know is what I see, and what I see, I like it. I like the on-field product. I like how he leads, you know, how Jordan made the reference to how he's been leading, you know, that locker room guy in the offseason, which is true. I'm all in on him. I'm all in on him.
And I wanted to just go over his stats last year because people forget how effective he was. He had 576 yards, averaging 5.1 yards a carry.
Like 500? Wow.
Yeah, he had almost 600. And the thing is, he had what, like two or three 50-plus yard runs taken away?
Yep, he did.
And he's not like he's not a home run hitter like Jalen Knighton is, but he's the guy that is just a workhorse, and he is a tank. Like, he is a big guy. I think Coach Felier or someone mentioned him as one of the guys who took, like, who made the biggest strides in the weight room this past offseason. And that's saying something because even last year, Cam was like, he's a big guy.
I'm looking at, and I don't know because every site's different, but I'm looking at College Football Reference right now. Mm-hmm. That website has him listed as 5'10", 201. I happen to think that he's over that 201, maybe closer to 210. But I mean, I'm leaving class one day in the spring semester and I see him and I'm like, this little guy, oh, that's Cam, and he is exactly what you said. His damn legs look like tree trunks. He's a freaking tank. He's a freaking tank. And the thing is, he can move. Remember how Tyrone Moss looked? He's a more chiseled version of Tyrone Moss.
Yeah, he's a quicker Tyrone Moss.
Yeah.
That's a very good comparison. A Broward County legend right there. R.I.P.
There you go.
And Kay, I just have a few more questions. Sorry, the questions keep flowing whenever you're on the show, man.
keep them coming, man.
The linebacker room. So Bradley Jennings tweeted the other day how he is healthy and ready to go. I can't remember if you were a big fan of him or Wayman Steed or Joyner, one of the other linebackers. Both. Yeah, absolutely. So where do you see this linebacker room going? Because I know we've talked about it a lot. Obviously, you have Zach McLeod, and then you also have Brooks and Huff. Outside of that, how do you see this linebacker room showing out?
I'm not as dark on it as a lot of people are because, I mean, that's one of the position groups that going into the spring game that we never had, I mean, there's a lot of injuries in that room. I do think Zach's going to start, okay? The other guy that I have starting is going to be Brooks. I think he's going to start. And the other thing about the linebacker room is that Miami's only going to be playing two linebackers at a time. Remember that, because that striker is a striker. It's two linebackers, so the depth at linebacker really shouldn't worry everyone as much as they're worried about because we're playing two guys at a time. Sometimes we may even have one linebacker on the field depending on how many DBs we have out there. But the thing with the linebacker room this year, and I'm not breaking any news here, there's going to be way more speed on the field. Everybody loved Shaq. Everybody loved Pinkney, and for good reason, but they're dated linebackers. If this was 10, 12, 15 years ago, they both would have been first-round picks because they're downhill. You know, they're thumpers. Yeah, they got that sideline speed, but not like Sean Spence, not like what's his name from Miramar that came in with Tracy Howard. Forgetting his name, but that's the speed that Huff brings. That's the speed that Brooks brings, and I think we're gonna see a lot of Huff. I just don't know how much playing time he's gonna get over a guy with experience like McLeod. And even though Brooks didn't have that many snaps, they're more than what Huff did. But that ultra speed linebacker package, you got to be looking at Huff and Brooks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with you that, you know, because we're only playing the two linebackers that. Depth shouldn't be as much of a concern as some people see it. However, on the on the inverse, all of our depth is unproven, and a lot of our depth has injury history, which is what makes me concerned. Because you're right, we only need four or five dudes, you know, to make the whole season go by smoothly. However, I mean, what if some of this injury history strikes up again, and then, you know, one of the only guys that we have to, I don't want to say names, you know, just because I've never seen these dudes, but say only, you know, we have only four dudes, but one of them ends up being a bust. You know, I mean, we've never seen most of these guys play real minutes, you know, or a large amount of minutes. That's my concern right there, is like, what if there's only a few that can get on the field and they end up just not being as good as we wanted them to?
That's, and you have a legitimate concern, but you know what? That's where the whole defensive side, the whole aspect of a team defense comes in, because you want to know what's going to make for these linebackers to look great. A dominant ass defensive tackle, which wasn't the case. Miami's defense, for as good as it was last year, because it was what, top 15, top 20. It was great. Mm. It's just in moments that we needed to get off the field, fourth and 17. Miami sucked in third and longs, which is incomprehensible. I don't understand how that happens. But to answer your point, if one, just one defensive tackle, and it should be Nesta because of he's the, mm-hmm. the most talented defensive tackle on, if just one defensive tackle steps up to make life easier for these linebackers, say one is consistent enough and plays well enough to get the eye of opposing offensive coordinator saying we need to double that guy on the line, okay, then that's all these linebackers need, okay? Ray Lewis, when he lost Tony Siragusa, all right, he said, I need a playmaking defensive tackle in front of me. Fast forward, they draft Halolinata, and all this Ray Lewis talk of he's losing a step all of a sudden goes away, okay, because he has a guy that makes life easier for him. That's going to be key for these linebackers.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, think about those linebackers for the Canes in the early 2000s. I mean, Vilma and DJ Williams were able to run free because you had Vince Wilfork up there. And even in 2017, you know, you saw what McLeod, Quarterman, and Pinckney were able to do because you had, you know, you had McIntosh, you had Norton. And so I like that you brought that up, because I think people are underselling how much we need Nesta Silvera this season. I mean, because John Ford and Jordan Miller are solid defensive tackles, but they're not and they may prove me wrong, but they're not game changers like a Gerald Willis was. They're not game changers like a Vince Wilfork was. I think Nesta, and I think we all believe this, that he can be that kind of a player. And last year he flashed that, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are kind of underselling his importance this year, because if he can shut down the middle, that'll solve so many problems for our linebackers.
You want to get pissed off really quick, fellas? You want to get mad really quick or disappointed, whatever it is. Going back to your point about 2017, okay? RJ McIntosh had by himself from the defensive tackle spot 12 and a half tackles for loss. All right, he had 2.5 sacks. I'm going to read to you the tackles for losses last season from our defensive tackles only. Pat Bethel, 5.5. John Ford, 3.5. Jordan Miller, 2.5. Chigozie Nuorukwu, 1. And Nesta, 1. That's 13.5 between five defensive tackles. When RJ McIntosh, which is the last time we had a very good, consistent defensive tackle, had 12.5 in 2017. You want to know how many Kendrick Norton had as the second highest? He had 6.5. We need that. We need that. It's huge for the linebackers. Yeah. It'll make things. It takes away the chances of them getting doubled, because Ray Lewis was getting doubled when Tony Siragusa was gone, and it kind of limited his effectiveness.
Well, and it'll also take a lot of the pressure off Rousseau and Roche, because we are like putting all of our cards on them to have both of them having like 15 sack seasons, which I just don't think is going to happen. And I don't know. I think Jordan brought up his worry about the defensive tackles a few weeks ago, and I can't get it out of my head, man. So, but I mean, that's really like, the show has been so positive up until then, but
sorry.
This is one of the, I'm not worried about the Hurricanes defense, because I just don't worry about a Manny Diaz defense. They're going to be a top 20, force in the country. I think they could be a top 10 if Rousseau, Roche, and Phillips are able to do what we expect them to do. But I mean, we need them, man. Like, we need them to be like 2018, 2017. We need to get the – I don't know if we're going to have the turnover chain this year, but we are going to need to force turnovers because that's how we won so many games in 17.
Yeah, man. But to answer your point, Jordan, like, I mean, your concerns are legit. Like, what happens if said guy gets down and, you know, then there's no experience, then – you know, look, I hate to sound cliche, but it's next man up, man. These guys are here for a reason. I mean, you look at the guys, they're all fast. Brooks, Huff, Flagg. Steed is a thumper with some speed. Cave has some speed. All of those guys that I just mentioned, except for Brooks, don't have any snaps. So I get it. Ryan Ragone may see some big-time snaps. I mean, he was huge in getting King over here, you know, being from Houston, but... Yeah. Jennings doesn't have any snaps. Joyner was a big deal when we got him. He doesn't have much. So yes, that's a concern. But I kind of put it back to the receivers position. It can't be that hard. I've never played football at college level, but you're a linebacker. You know what your assignments are. Yeah. Diaz's defense is not complicated. If they get just one defensive tackle to step up with our ends, I just don't see it being that much of an issue.
Yeah, man. I mean, I appreciate your optimism. I have a hard time being optimistic. I'm like a bipolar Canes fan, and that some days I'm running around my house like jumping up and down, screaming 11-1. And then, but then when people ask me about the roster, I'm like, oh well, I don't know. Our defense kind of sucks, you know. Like,
well, hopefully though. So hopefully I'm all over the place. A little better.
Yeah,
I think
and people forget. I mean, our schedule really isn't that difficult. Like, I know I like to be negative on here and saying that, like, yeah, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, those road games will be tough. Va Tech, obviously tough, but realistically, and even more so last year, there's no reason why they can't win at least 9 games. Because if they can't win at least 9 games, I think Manny needs to get out. That's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying all before last year, though, was there's no reason we shouldn't win at least 6 games, and we did, so.
I got news for you guys. And this is an old – you know what, I'll retweet it just to piss some more people off. But 8 wins that I hope do not happen, 8 wins is good enough for Manny to come back next year for several reasons.
I don't know, man.
For several reasons. But low-key, and it really shouldn't be, other than – because I really think that Michigan State's going to be a win. Other than Florida State, yeah, North Carolina is may decide the division, but nobody's talking about Virginia Tech. I get it. They beat us last year, but they weren't a bad team last year. They were way better than I thought they would be.
Yeah.
So that's another game. And it's at Lane Stadium this year. So, I mean
– In November.
So who knows what their record's going to be. Let me see what their schedule is. I mean, whatever. I'll pull it up later. But
And Va Tech is a team that especially in Blacksburg, that is a tough, tough place to play. I mean, I can't remember too many times besides like 2 years ago and then that season where Kaya and Duke Johnson just went crazy on them. But other than that, I can't remember too many times that we just went into Lane Stadium and it was an easy game.
Go ahead.
And I think that by November, a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this. I think that it's going to be close to a full stadium, even with everything going on. And like you said, a lot of people aren't talking about Virginia Tech, but I mean, I went into last year's game because they had just gotten beat by Duke by like 40 at home. Yeah. I remember you and I were literally in the parking lot at Hard Rock Stadium last year, walking into the stadium saying, yeah, it's going to be no doubt about it. We're going to win this game. And I almost left in the first quarter. Like, they're just a team and there's so many teams like that we play. I mean, North Carolina, Georgia Tech, those three, even Virginia, like you never know what you're getting with them. You never know what kind of game they're going to play and how close it's going to be. And that game in November, everyone's talking about this North Carolina game. But that November game in Virginia Tech, I think that will probably decide the Coastal Division.
Well, here's their schedule before they meet us. They In chronological order, Liberty at home, Penn State at home, Middle Tennessee is their first road game, okay? Then they come back home to play North Alabama. I didn't even know that was a school, okay? Then they host Georgia Tech again. All of these are home games, and they go on the road. They go to Chapel Hill, then Boston College at home, then at Louisville, at Pitt, and then Miami. They probably will have a loss or two, but it'll probably be – I think they're going to be competitive, man. I don't think they're going to suck.
Well, and it's the same thing with North Carolina. You know, Jordan and I think that they might be a little bit overhyped, but I don't have their schedule in front of me, but I think it's pretty – it's not too intimidating before they come into Hard Rock on October 24th.
Let me see what that is. To answer your question – their schedule is as follows.
I think they open up with UCF, I believe.
Okay. Oh, this is baseball. What the hell is going on? Let me just type it in. UNC football schedule 2020. All right. So they go. Yeah, they're at UCF. Excuse me. They kick off the season at UCF. They host Auburn on September 12th. They host James Madison. I'm sorry. They're at UCF. They're at – what the hell is going on here with this? Okay. At UCF, they host Auburn. They host James Madison. They host Georgia Tech. They go to UVA. They host VT. They're at Duke, and then they come to Miami. And then after that, it's UConn, Pitt, Boston College, and NC State. I don't think they're as good as advertised either, but the hell, they beat us last year with a freshman quarterback.
I mean, they really just have Howell, and I think they have some talented receivers. But other than that, and it's going to be at Hard Rock Stadium, and I think there's going to be fans there. I think someone brought it up in the Zoom the other night. Like, when we played them 2 years ago, that place definitely wasn't full, but it was loud, and we forced, wow, like, 17 turnovers, had, like, 17 pick sixes, and that's a game that I'm very back and forth on. It's kind of like the Virginia game this past season, because you a lot of hype going into the year, and it's just a game that you can see Miami winning.
I just know I can't talk to you the week leading up to the game, because you're going to be pissing me off, because you just you always do this when it comes to Tar Heel games, but it's okay.
I mean, you have to realize that that since 04, man, that team has given us more problems than maybe any other program.
I get it. But the other on the flip side, and you're not wrong with what you're saying, I'm not disagreeing with you, but a lot of those games Miami stepped on their own, you know what, man. And it just one game they blew us out of the water. I get it. I think that's the year they went to the ACC championship game. But a bunch of those games were, especially the year one of Mark Richt, when they scored a touchdown and it really shouldn't have counted as a touchdown. That was a week following FSU. That should have been a win. But let me ask you this. Going back to the Virginia Tech, because I wanted to ask, I just didn't want to cut you off. Aren't we undefeated the last two times going up there? We won the last two times up there, right?
I think we won the last time we went up there. And then, no, we lost. We won the last time, but the time before that we went up there, I think we lost by like 20. Oh. It was during that. It was Rick's first year, and it was in the middle of that four-game losing streak.
Okay. All right. We'll see, man. But yeah, to summarize that Virginia Tech game, nobody's talking about it. We're talking about UNC, Michigan State, Florida State. I'm looking at that VT game.
I'm with you, man. I agree.
And that Michigan State game still scares me. I'll be honest.
We'll see, man. They're in troubles, but that doesn't mean anything on the field. So we'll see.
And I'll end it with this. If we beat Michigan State, we will be undefeated going into the UNC game. Can you imagine the hype that will surround that weekend? Especially, you know, like I said, if there are any fans allowed into the game. But we could be top 15 on October 24th. I hate that game comes off a bye week. But that week four game against Michigan State, that is going to tell me almost everything that I need to know about this team.
Temple, yeah, Wagner, go ahead, Jordan, my bad.
Well, I was just going to say, I agree, because their new coach, Mel Tucker, I'm not saying I think he's going to be like a bad coach, but I mean, it's not like he blew people out of the water in his only year at Colorado last year. So I'm not expecting him to be one of those dudes where, you know, he comes in and rides the ship, kind of like a PJ Fleck kind of guy, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting him to have that kind of impact on Michigan State. So I do think they're a good barometer and that they're a rebuilding team. You know, I'm not expecting them to contend for a division title next season.
No.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a very average Power 5 team next year, and how we play against them is going to be a really good barometer.
The thing with Michigan State that I look at, because you brought up, you know, their new coach and everything, is there's a common thread every time that a school is in a really bad position with coaches and turnover and controversy and stuff like that. Take our example. Golden gets fired. Larry, what's his name? Ends up coaching, whatever the hell his name is.
I can't remember. Yeah.
That guy.
Tight end coach.
Exactly, yeah. Him. They fought for him. These guys, they fought for him. You know, that Duke game, I think they won, what, like 2-3 games in a row? We went to a bowl game, we lost. But they fought. So I think that these guys under Mel Tucker, they're going to be fighting. So I'm not going to wear a big badge of honor, you know, after the Michigan State win. But, I mean, I think it's going to test these guys. It's going to be the first road game. It's going to be at a big-time venue, whether there's people there or not, I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be rosy. I do think it's going to be a fight, and I'll take a one-point win, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't care how we win. Just if we can get a road win in East Lansing coming off a 6-7 year, I mean, I know that we've kept you for a long time, Mike, but I have to say it, like, this was what pisses me off so much about Canes fan is, like, they just automatically, like, think that's a W. Like, I'm like, guys, like, I know that, you know, things have changed, but, like, you can't, like, as a Canes fan, is there really any guaranteed wins anymore? Yeah, exactly. Like, and people call me negative for this, but I'm just being honest. Like,
it's not even a Kane thing. It's a college football landscape thing, because across college football, I mean, Michigan lost to freaking Appy State at home, for crying out loud. Troy beats LSU. Yeah, I get they won 10 games that year. Troy did. They were pretty decent. But still, these are automatic W's, right? There's athletes everywhere in college football. Everywhere. Anybody can beat anybody. And even though you're supposed to win, that's just it's not it, dude. It's just not like that anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not. So people need to get out of their heads that, because this is what I'm gonna wrap it up with. And you can keep me for longer if you want. I really don't care. as bad as FSU has been the past few years, okay, it's still a close game with Miami. Why? Because there's athletes on the field. And records get thrown out of the window when those two teams play anyway. So I don't care if, let's say, we play FSU at the last game of the season one year. If they're 0-for whatever, that's still going to be a tough game just because they have a spear on the side of their helmet. And they know that they're playing guys wearing orange and green. No matter how bad they are, no matter how funny looking their coaches are, it's always going to be a tough game. And people want to beat Miami all the time. They're going to make it their freaking Super Bowl. It's always been that way. It'll never change. Miami's not relevant, right? Then why the hell do people celebrate so much and talk big money after they beat Miami?
They're
irrelevant.
That's what I was telling these idiot UCF fans the other day. I mean, I got into it with those peasants. Like, you got, like, that's the thing. Like, I don't care how many, like, 11-0 or 12-0 seasons a school like UCF has. Like, you will never be that third school in Florida. Like, never. You will never. Like, well, and how about this? And this is completely random. Did you guys see Henry Gray commit to FIU?
Yeah.
How about that?
It's Butch. That's Butch. Butch all over that. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well, and one last thing. Jordan and I talked about this last episode, but one thing that Miami will have in its advantage going up to Michigan State, I think there will be some fans there, but it definitely won't be filled to their 75,000 seat capacity. That is going to be a huge advantage for Miami. I mean, if it's just 11 guys on 11 guys, you know, no effect from that huge crowd, you know, I will take Miami in that. Like, that, I think people are underestimating the impact that this corona will have for the Hurricanes. I think it will be a huge factor. I mean, because Think about us on the road the past few years. We're horrible. If it's just us against them, let's roll. I'm ready.
No, I like that. But then you got to think about it at the flip, because we have a hell of a home field advantage when Hard Rock is rocking, no pun intended. So how's that gonna work out?
Maybe once a year.
True.
Like rocking, like maybe once a year.
True. I mean, it still gets loud. Let's say it's half full. I mean, the acoustics in that place are just – it makes for a loud environment because it's like semi-closed in. So that UNC game that you referenced just 2 years ago, like you said, it wasn't sold out, but it was loud. It was very loud.
Yeah, it's a good point, man. It's a good point. Well, Mike, we always appreciate you coming on, brother. Love talking to you. And whenever you want to hop back on, you got our number, man.
Appreciate you guys, man. Y'all stay safe. Jordan, thanks. Appreciate it. And course, same to you, Marsh.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you later, man.
Thanks, Mike. See you, man.
All right.
Cool. Good show today, man.
That was one of my favorites. And also, stay on the line after the show ends, because I have some exciting news to tell you about a guest that wants to come on the show.
Perfect. Okay.
Okay. So, well, yeah.
I think I've said everything. I think I'm, you know, do you have anything else you want to add before we wrap up the show, or are you good?
I think we're good for right now, man. Okay. Like I said, thank you. I was telling Jordan before the show, we were top 35 in the country last week for football podcasts. So thank you guys so much for the support. We really, really do appreciate it. And we do love you guys. And, yeah, I just love you guys so much, and I love my Hurricanes. Jordan and I think we have some big things coming for the show. So this is just the beginning, and I got nothing else. Go Canes as always.
Cool. Go Canes, man.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like.